Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ziprecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Save big during Labor Day at Lowe's. Get up to 40% off select major appliances. Plus, buy more to get up to an additional 20% off. Shop even more savings with 3 Stay Green 1-cubic foot vegetable and flower garden soil bags for $10. This Labor Day, take care of your home for less at Lowe's. We help. You save. Valid through 9/3. Soil offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
We've devoted the last 8 episodes to studying the life of Lyndon Johnson, with an eye towards whether he had any involvement in the assassination of his predecessor, John F. Kennedy. In this episode, we review all of the remaining claims against Johnson that we have not yet addressed, and then summarize what we know about Lyndon B. Johnson's role in the assassination of President Kennedy.
In Dallas, Texas, 3 shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas. The first reports say that President Kennedy has been seriously wounded by this shooting.
The flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time.
This morning resumed custody the man they have formally charged with the assassination of President Kennedy.
I'm just a part of it.
The man is Lee Oswald.
Was Oswald acting alone, or was he a member of a conspiracy? The mission answers, he acted alone.
I'm working.
This is Solving JFK. I'm your host, Matt Crumpton. Let's circle back to someone we mentioned for the first time in the last episode, Colonel Howard Burris, Vice President Johnson's military aide. When Colonel Burris accompanied Johnson on a May 1961 trip to Vietnam, it marked the beginning of a back channel between Johnson and the CIA, which provided Johnson with unfiltered intelligence information that President Kennedy was not aware of. Burris was closely tied to Johnson. He was regularly in contact with Cliff Carter, Johnson's right-hand man. He also used the office of Bobby Baker from time to time. And according to Larry Hancock, Colonel Burris made a mysterious trip to Lyndon Johnson's ranch on the day before the assassination. We still don't know the purpose of that trip. We'll cover Burris again when we get to the military. To the extent Johnson would need a reliable back channel to the CIA and the military without involving President Kennedy's administration, he had that in Colonel Burris. If Lyndon Johnson was involved in the plot to kill President Kennedy, we would expect there to potentially be some clues in the form of his actions before and after the assassination. So what did Johnson do before the assassination? We just heard that Colonel Burris came to his ranch the day before. Some researchers also argue that Alan Dulles met with Johnson at his ranch in the summer of 1963. We know that Dulles did visit Lyndon Johnson at his ranch in 1960. In David Talbot's The Devil's Chessboard, Talbot argues that Johnson was visited by Dulles at his ranch in the summer of 63. Talbot's source for this claim is an August 15, 1963 Chicago Tribune article with a photo, quote, that showed the vice president astride a horse while a beaming ladybird and Dulles looked on. On further examination, this photo of Dulles and Johnson was published in papers across the country in August of 1963 as a part of a story about Lady Bird Johnson as a hostess. The picture of Johnson and Dulles was a file photo from a prior visit, almost certainly the 1960 visit. In other words, Alan Dulles did not visit Lyndon Johnson at his ranch just before the assassination. While LBJ wasn't plotting with Dulles at his ranch in 1963, he apparently was plotting something else on the night before the assassination, changing John Connolly's seat in the motorcade. According to author Craig Zerbel, Vice President Johnson came to President Kennedy's suite and demanded that the motorcade seating be changed. Johnson was slated to sit with his political enemy, Senator Ralph Yarbrough, but instead, Johnson wanted to ride with his longtime close friend and political ally, Governor John Connolly. President Kennedy did not go along with Johnson's request. According to author William Manchester, the argument was so loud that the First Lady asked what it was about, to which the president responded, quote, "That's just Lyndon. He's having a bad day." Witness Max Peck said that Johnson, quote, "left that suite like a pistol, with long legs pumping and looking furious." The idea that Lyndon Johnson would want to ride with his dear friend instead of his enemy is really not that surprising. For a grown man to throw a fit to the president about a seating arrangement implies that the issue had higher stakes than just who Johnson's traveling companion would be during a 10-mile drive through Dallas. Yes, there was bad blood between Johnson and the Kennedys, and perhaps Lyndon Johnson was just that petty. Still, it's also not crazy to say that it looks like Johnson is trying to do a last-minute switcheroo to protect his boy, John Connolly, and put his enemy, Senator Yarbrough, in harm's way. This, of course, can only be true if Johnson knew what was about to happen. This is one of those issues where the sourcing is not that strong for such an important point. Craig Zerbel says that the hotel staff heard the substance of the conversation, but he doesn't provide any names. William Manchester does confirm that the argument happened, but he doesn't say what it was about. It would be nice to know who specifically heard these details, given the potential incendiary nature of the claim from Zerbel. Another conversation with Johnson at the Hotel Texas that night came to light 30 years later. Elliot Janeway was an economic advisor to Lyndon Johnson and was a fundraiser for Johnson's campaign for president in 1960. According to Gordon Ferry, no relation to David, before Janeway's death in 1993, Janeway confided to Ferry that the night before the assassination at Hotel Texas in Fort Worth, there was a meeting between Janeway, Lyndon Johnson, and John Connolly. Lady Bird Johnson and Mrs. Connolly were also present. During this meeting, Johnson said it was necessary to go along with the plot to kill Kennedy. Finally, there's a controversy about whether Johnson ducked down before the shots were fired, based on a photo by James Altgens. This picture was taken just after Kennedy had been shot, but before the deadly headshot. When we look two cars back from the presidential limo in the photo, it appears that Johnson is nowhere to be seen in his seat. Of course, if Johnson knew that there were going to be shots fired in Dealey Plaza, that would be a reason for him to duck down. And the photo does look like he ducked. There are a couple of counterpoints on that topic. First, the picture was taken after at least one shot had already been fired. So it's possible that Johnson did duck, but he was simply reacting to the gunfire. Although, as you can see from the photo, most other people did not assume that it was gunfire, but you can see people looking around to see where the sound came from. The other issue is that, according to Jim Mars, he interviewed Senator Ralph Yarbrough, who was in the car with Johnson, about Johnson ducking down. And Yarbrough told Mars, quote, "It just didn't happen. It was a small car. Johnson was a big man, tall. His knees were up against his chin as it was. There was no room for that to happen." We talked about LBJ's actions before the assassination, but what did he do immediately after Kennedy was shot? There is some evidence that Johnson was worried about a larger conspiracy in the aftermath of Dealey Plaza. At Parkland Hospital, Malcolm Kilduff, the press secretary, told Johnson that he needed to announce President Kennedy's death. Johnson then told Kilduff to wait until he left the hospital to make the announcement. Johnson said, quote, "I think I had better get out of here before you announce it. We don't know whether this is a worldwide conspiracy, whether they're after me as well as they were after President Kennedy, or whether they're after Speaker McCormick or Senator Hayden. We just don't know." Johnson similarly told biographer Merle Miller, quote, "I asked that the announcement be made after we had left the room so that if it were an international conspiracy and they were out to destroy our form of government and the leaders in that government, that we would minimize the opportunity for doing so." Although Johnson said that he was worried about an international conspiracy, there is no record of him attempting to contact the National Command Center, the White House Situation Room, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, or the Secretary of Defense. If there really was a threat, Johnson's actions did not reflect that. Navy Admiral Tazewell Shepard briefed Johnson when he returned to the White House from Dallas. Shepard said, quote, "There was no sense of an imminent nuclear war upon Johnson's return." The fact that Johnson was saying that he feared an attack but was taking no actions to stop such an attack suggests that he was either incompetent, perhaps choking under the pressure of the moment, or possibly that he did not actually believe that an international conspiracy was happening. On the other hand, Democratic National Committee advance man Martin Underwood told Vince Palomara that President Johnson sent him to Mexico City in 1966 to get information about what really happened so that he could try to clear Johnson's name as a potential conspirator. Underwood said that Mexico City CIA station chief Wynn Scott told him that the CIA, the FBI, and the mafia all, quote, knew JFK was going to be hit. Underwood also asked Wynn Scott if Lyndon Johnson was involved in the assassination, to which Scott replied, quote, Not in any way. None whatsoever. Underwood provided Palomara with typed notes from his 1966 meeting with Wynn Scott. While the notes confirmed that the meeting happened, they did not provide any details about what Scott said. Planning a trip this year? Imagine how much richer your travel experience could be if you could speak the local language. With Rosetta Stone, you'll gain the confidence to have real conversations and create deeper connections wherever you go. Rosetta Stone also has lifetime memberships that give you access to all 25 languages so you can learn as many as you want, whenever you want. And best of all, Marina Oswald used Rosetta Stone to learn English when she came to the United States. Thanks, Rosetta Stone. Okay, that part's not true, but Rosetta Stone is awesome. Don't wait. Unlock your language learning potential now. Solving JFK listeners can grab Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. That's unlimited access to 25 language courses for life. Visit rosettastone.com/today to get started and claim your 50% off. Don't miss out. Go to rosettastone.com/today and start improving your language skills right away. Did you know there's an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your door? I'm talking about Mood.com's incredible line of functional gummies. You can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code JFK. Forget one-size-fits-all supplements that only get you high. Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood you're looking for. They found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to target nearly every mood and health concern you can think of. Best of all, not only is every product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, you can get 20% off of your first order with code JFK. So head on over to Mood.com and find the functional gummy that matches the mood you're looking for. 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code JFK. Over the course of the Solving JFK series on LBJ, we've put forth many anecdotes and witness claims that paint the former president in a negative light, some of which potentially implicate him in the assassination. I'd like to now quickly lay out a few additional arguments for Johnson's involvement in the assassination that we have not yet discussed. First, the biggest enemy of the United States thought Lyndon Johnson was the chief conspirator. In a December 1st, 1966 memo, a source who furnished reliable information to the FBI in the past from the Soviet Union said that the KGB believed that Johnson was behind President Kennedy's assassination. Soviet Communist Party officials, quote, believed there was some well-organized conspiracy on the part of the ultra-right in the United States to effect a coup. They seemed convinced that the assassination was not the deed of one man, but that it arose out of a carefully planned campaign in which several people played a part. A few paragraphs later, that same memo says, quote, our source added that the KGB was in possession of data purporting to indicate President Johnson was responsible for the assassination of the late President John F. Kennedy. This information speaks for itself. We can't easily dismiss some level of involvement from Johnson when even the KGB thinks he did it. Next, we have Jack Ruby on tape apparently implicating Lyndon Johnson in the crime. Ruby tells a reporter that if Adlai Stevenson were the vice president, the assassination never would have happened. Here's the recording.
You mentioned about Adlai Stevenson. If he was vice president, there would never have been an assassination of that beloved President Kennedy.
Is this plan going?
Well, the answer is the man in office now.
Now, this recording of Ruby could be taken to mean that the plotters disagreed with Adlai Stevens' politics, but they agreed with Johnson's. Or, the more sinister interpretation is that Johnson was the one behind the assassination. What about the opinion of Jackie Kennedy? According to entertainer Eddie Fisher, his one-time girlfriend, Pam Turnure, who was the press secretary for the First Lady, told him that Jackie Kennedy told her on the flight from Dallas back to Washington, quote, "Lyndon Johnson did it." This is one more nugget of hearsay that would not be admissible in court, but is interesting nonetheless. Attorney Morris Wolfe worked on civil rights legislation in the Kennedy administration alongside Bobby Kennedy. After the assassination, Wolfe went on to work with Senator John Sherman Cooper on getting the civil rights bill passed. In that role, he ended up spending a lot of time with Senator Cooper when Cooper was on the Warren Commission. Wolf says that Senator Cooper told him the following about the Warren Commission. Quote, "They want to bury the truth under a pile of stones. I think Lyndon Baines Johnson was involved in the planning and execution of Kennedy's death." We also have the claim of longtime CIA officer E. Howard Hunt that Lyndon Johnson was at the top of the hierarchy for the planning of President Kennedy's murder. Hunt is an important figure in the case overall, and we'll be coming back to Hunt later to cover his career and claims in depth. To make a very long story short, at a time when Hunt believed that he didn't have much time left to live due to his failing health, he made a confession to his son, St. John Hunt, about the identity of the planners of the assassination. At the very top of the list, Hunt put LBJ and then drew a line to Cord Meyer, who was in charge of covert action for the CIA. From there, Hunt also implicated CIA officers David Attlee Phillips, Bill Harvey, and David Morales, as well as Frank Sturgis, Antonio Vesiana, and a French gunman on the grassy knoll. Hunt said that he was just a bench warmer in the assassination plot. While Hunt's statement may be self-serving and incomplete, it is, at a minimum, worth noting that a former high-level CIA officer puts Lyndon Johnson at the top of the conspiracy. So where does that leave us? Remember, we already determined that Johnson was involved in the cover-up of the assassination after the fact due to the phone call with Hoover on the day after the assassination, where Hoover tells Johnson about an Oswald imposter in Mexico City. The audio from the full phone call was intentionally erased, but the part of the transcript that remains makes it clear that Johnson was aware of the Mexico City Oswald imposter issue and never brought it up again, even though he used that same Mexico City meeting where Oswald was impersonated to pressure Earl Warren and Richard Russell to join his presidential commission to review the assassination. So LBJ was complicit in the cover-up, but what about the assassination planning? Let's apply the classic investigatory technique of the means, motive, and opportunity test to see where Johnson objectively ranks as a suspect. First, we turn our attention to whether Johnson had the means to order the assassination. We now know that the Assassination Eve Murchison party almost certainly did not happen, and that Mack Wallace's fingerprint was not found on the sixth floor. However, the audio tape presented to the world this year by Billy Sol Estes's grandson, Shane Stevens, does complicate matters. Just when I was ready to rule out Mack Wallace's involvement, this tape comes in and revives the possibility that Wallace was somehow involved. If both the tape and the substance of what is being said are legitimate. I also think it's possible that Estes was recording a false story for the tape to implicate Mack Wallace and to protect Henry Marshall's real killer. But whether or not the tape is authentic, I don't see any possible way that Mack Wallace planned the assassination overall. Certainly not in the way Billy Sol Estes and Cliff Carter are implying on the tape. Estes would have us believe that Wallace connected with Jack Ruby, who then connected with Lee Harvey Oswald. But that doesn't address what Oswald was doing in the Soviet Union, or New Orleans, or Mexico City. Are we to believe that Mack Wallace set up the Mexico City trip? Did Wallace procure an Oswald imposter to talk to Kostikov at the Soviet embassy? The answer to all of these questions, for me, is a resounding no way. There is no credible evidence, in my view, to support Mack Wallace as the planner of the assassination. Now, outside of Mack Wallace, did Johnson have the means to control the assassination? Potentially, yes. He had relationships with military generals and the CIA through Colonel Burris. He also had relationships with intelligence agencies from his time in the House and Senate, not to mention his personal friendship with ousted CIA director Alan Dulles. So is it possible that LBJ set the plot in motion? I believe it is possible. It's just that we don't have any direct evidence for it. Still, if Johnson was involved, and if the assassination was successful, as it ended up being, Johnson would have the means to control the investigation and a compliant J. Edgar Hoover to help. And that's exactly what happened. The next question is whether LBJ had a motive for killing President Kennedy. This is an easy one. Aside from achieving his lifelong goal of becoming president of the United States, Lyndon Johnson had other strong motives to get rid of JFK. In the fall of 1963, the walls were caving in around Johnson. The Billy Sol Estes investigation and the Henry Marshall murder sullied Johnson's reputation. The Bobby Baker investigation would have led to Johnson's arrest, according to Life magazine editor James Wagenvoord. And on the day of the assassination, Don Reynolds was testifying about how Johnson required kickbacks for doing business with him. When Johnson became president, he was able to sweep all of those misdeeds under the rug in the name of coming together as a country after President Kennedy's death. CIA Director John McCone met with President Johnson on November 30, 1963, and wrote in a subsequent memo that Johnson, quote, brought up a number of very personal problems and asked that McCone and McGeorge Bundy, quote, as a team, help him solve some of his problems. Similarly, a February 13, 1964 FBI report says that President Johnson confiscated the Bobby Baker file from the Department of Justice while Attorney General Robert Kennedy was out of the office on a peace mission trip. We also cannot forget that Johnson and the Kennedys had an intense disdain for one another, so much so that insiders believed Johnson would not be on the 1964 ticket as vice president had President Kennedy lived. So yes, LBJ had a very strong motive to want President Kennedy gone. Finally, did Johnson have the opportunity to plan the assassination? Determining whether someone had opportunity is much easier if you're accusing them of committing the crime. When the accusation is that the person planned the crime, it becomes more difficult to clearly sort out this question. There is one person who sticks out to me when it comes to LBJ and opportunity: Governor John Connally. As noted in episode 70, John Connally wasn't just the governor of Texas. He was Lyndon Johnson's extremely close confidant. In addition to serving in the Navy with LBJ, Connally worked at LBJ's radio station, served as his congressional assistant, managed his losing 1941 Senate campaign and his winning 1946 House re-election campaign, served as a strategist on Johnson's notorious 1948 Senate campaign, and acted as the chief surrogate for Johnson in the 1960 presidential campaign before Johnson lost the top spot on the ticket to Kennedy. Don't forget, upon becoming vice president, Johnson got Connally the job as Secretary of the Navy, which positioned Connally to run for governor of Texas. I point out how close Governor Connally's relationship was with Johnson because it was John Connally who insisted that the trademark be used for the site of Kennedy's speech. And according to White House advance man Jerry Bruno, the Secret Service decided to go forward with the trademark out of deference to Connally. After the assassination and after Johnson's presidency, Johnson and Connally remained close, even forming a partnership to operate a gold mine. In conclusion, I find that Lyndon Johnson, with the assistance of J. Edgar Hoover, covered up the assassination after the fact. I find it inconclusive, but likely, that Johnson had some sort of foreknowledge regarding the assassination. And I find the question of whether Lyndon Johnson had any role in planning the assassination to be inconclusive. It is possible, but it's not proven. Next time on Solving JFK, we'll have a recap and rebuttals episode on Lyndon Johnson with Jeff Crudell from JFK, The Enduring Secret. If you heard anything that you believe is out of context, or if you have additional information to offer, you can let us know at solvingjfkpodcast@gmail.com. Please provide citations to the record for any fact that you're relying on. For transcripts, sources, and official podcast merchandise, visit solvingjfkpodcast.com. Thanks for listening. Visit solvingjfkpodcast.com for more information.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast.
which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Lowe's has the Labor Day deals you need to give your home a new look. Buy one, get one free select interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Then, add the final touch with 2 for $8 on select 2.5 or 3-quart mums. Refresh your home and save big while doing it. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 9/3. Mums offer in-store only. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, more terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for details.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.